idea is here is that there certainly will be prohibited actions that a system cannot do. For example, in the GPS ban, I think there's a lot of people who are very concerned about allowing anything in there. I don't think the FCC is going to be allowed to move that UWB power level much up in that ban because of that, of the critical nature of the GPS signal. So there'll be prohibited aspects that could be used. There could be causal, that is, you know, reaction to an environment, how you react to that, your constructs in that regard. It could be interactive, negotiated constructs of cognition. And then I sort of put it this sort of weasel-worded last category, dynamic, which I'm not sure what it could be, you know, what these architectures could be, and I think that's part of the solicitation, is to look for those new concepts. But certainly you can already see prohibiting causal and some, we're just starting to get into interactive, negotiated access to the spectrum. But I think there's other other ways of doing it, and we have cognition. That sort of word there. I don't think I'm going to have too much of this, but that in the end, you know, adaption capabilities, you know, are out there. And they're sort of fundamental no matter which regulatory model that comes along. It doesn't really make a whole lot of difference which way we go, but if we're going to improve efficiencies, if we're going to provide greater services, greater performance, then you're going to need some of these cognitive functions anyway. It's not going to be mandated just to have it in the commons environment. It certainly could be used in the marketplace or even in the command and control area. The risk perspectives in the areas is certainly how do you regulate, how do you certify these deficit systems? Now that they're dynamic, they're no longer a static entity. So how do you regulate that? How do you certify that? One thing I want to bring, something that several people who are lots of researchers are thinking about is domain-aware systems. That is both a regulatory domain, maybe it's a service domain in which you're in, and how do you perform in each of those domains can be different. An example that the Wi-Fi community is actually dealing with right now is that if you have an access point on an airplane, it takes off from Dulles here in Washington, why is the Heathrow in London, there are two different regulatory environments in which it's operating in. Having that knowledge of where it is, it can then tailor its operations based upon that awareness of the domain in which it's in. But also you could see it being somebody walking onto the plane. The airport could have its own restrictions or its own characteristics that it wants to provide in the airport. And then moving into the plane, the airline may have restrictions on certain aspects of performance within the plane. So there's another type of domain. So having both the regulatory domain, the service domain in which you're in, is something that I think systems and cognitively can take advantage of. And certainly what mechanisms to insert in the policies, what protocols are appropriate there is a wonderfully rich area for research as well. And certainly there's lots of areas that need to be considered in any of the research areas. So in the end, you know, really the platforms are becoming available, both in commercial and government side. There's certainly a demand for sort of smarter services, and the policy and regulatory community is very receptive. So you know, now it's time to look at these architectures, define them, and have fun with them. So that's just a real quick survey of some of the research perspectives, sort of from our government or general context.
Joe, are you going to provide these slides on your website?
Subject to the speakers, okay, yeah, yes.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of words in these things. I just threw together lots of slides from our own internal thinking of what the research topics and challenges are, so yeah, I will.
In your slides on your software, you mentioned reconfigurability. Can you briefly tell us how you use reconfigurability in your software?
I can't speak for JTRS, but reconfigurability can be the reprogramming of just even the interactions of the layers. It could be.
But I'm talking about that's the difference between multi-programming and reconfigurability.
Right. Well, talking about our internal system, we don't do a whole lot with reconfigurability. I can't speak for JTRS how they're implementing that. So I'm not sure what you're.
You don't see a lot of use for
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just not familiar with how the JTRS works.
What uses could you conceive of?
Well, I think that domain aware area, for example, could be whether you have to have everything embedded, the rule set for whatever you like. Could there be a chance where you can come into a system that actually downloads the capabilities that you need to have as you come into it?
Right, but there's a big difference between having a processor with different pieces of software and having hardware that changes its configuration.
thing that people need is more on that programmability side. And I think you got, I think you have trust issues or performance issues or say assured capabilities, you're going to be changing the hardware configurations a lot. But there certainly would be areas that you could see them. But I think it's going to be more on the software side.
You mentioned the dynamic frequency selection.
H11H is actually the reporting mechanisms for DFS. It doesn't say that it's DFS, but it was. The question was: is how does DFS differ from 802.11.h? For those who are familiar with 802.11, it's a whole family of elements that goes into this, the overall standard for 802.11. In this case, DFS is affecting the A standard, the area interface of the 5 gigahertz standard. And the H is a reporting mechanism for the 5 gigahertz system, whereby it's supposed to have reports of if it measures the energy there, and then it's supposed to react to that. So H is actually developed in response to the DFS mechanism. And in fact, it comes out of the Hyperland standard in Europe, actually, originally. And H is just sort of a standard that was meant to address that listen, control, and talk mechanism, which has now been termed DFS. So essentially one and the same, although H does not specify the actual energy levels, does not specify performance level. The Hyperland standard, it does. 802.11 is chosen not to, although from a regulatory point of view, it is defined. So the standard doesn't define it, regulations does. This is under H11H discipline.
Any other questions? If not, let's thank Bill. And we now have a little bit of time for a break. Let's try to get back together at 11 o'clock.